What's up, everybody? It's Nintendo Time. That's right, N-Express is back. This week, we have a lot to talk about. Not only did Metroid release, or about to release, by the time you listen to it, this like episode, it should be out, theoretically. But we also had a Nintendo Direct just today with so much news. And on top of that, we are finally going to talk about Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle and do our full review on the show. But before we get to any of that, I should introduce everybody else. Ricky D is here.
What's up, Tim? I'm still switchless, but I'm in a good mood.
That's good. That makes one of us. Patrick Murphy is here.
I'd be in a better mood if I got to play Metroid early like Rick did.
I know. It looks so cool. I can't wait. And for the first time ever, Tyler Colbo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. Man, it's tough to be in a good mood without a Switch, Rick, but I'm glad you're holding through.
I mean, there is a lot of good news in the world right now. I mean, that Nintendo Direct, that was something.
Yeah, it was absolutely. I loved it. I was pretty much nonstop entertained. I know a lot of people were disappointed, but I thought there was some good stuff in there.
I listened to your podcast, listened to you talk about it. I walked away feeling like we got what I was pretty sure we would get. Like most people, I was hoping for something big, even though deep down inside I knew we wouldn't get something big, like a surprise like Smash.
We kind of got some sort of big stuff, though. There were a couple of surprise reveals that we'll get into.
Okay, we're going to have to talk about this shortly. It was overall a pretty decent Direct, and props to Nintendo for 45 minutes. Not just like a 10-minute or 50-minute stream. 45 minutes, it's awesome. But we're going to talk about that soon, because I do believe at the start of each show, we have two things that we get out of the way first, right?
Yeah, well, for starters, Tyler has never been on the show. He's a writer at Goomba Stomp in the Nintendo section. Tyler, you also host another podcast.
Yes, I do. The Nintendo Entertainment Podcast over at The Outer Haven. We do a weekly show. It's out every Friday. We like to have a good time. It's we do the news and all that, but we play some games with each other. It's a quality Nintendo show if you're looking for a lighter, little more banter-focused podcast.
Hey, we banter here.
Yeah, your guys' banter is fantastic. I love listening to your guys' show.
We get it along just fine all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Always a quality listen. So.
Awesome. Thank you for the kind words. But how are you at answering questions? Because the other thing we like to do on the show is every time we have a first-time guest, we ask them 5 questions in rapid succession. So, Rick, go ahead and fire at Tyler whenever you're ready.
All right, I got 5 unique questions this week. I'm not going to recycle any questions from previous guests. So question number 1, what would make the best Stephen King adaptation to a video game? The best Stephen King story, not Stephen King the person or people. Like, we're not adapting a person to the game. Like, the author.
All right, so that's tough. I have to go with... This is a really weird answer. I am a huge Boston Red Sox fan, and Stephen King actually wrote a book about the 2004 Boston Red Sox called Faithful. I wrote, like, 4 book reports on that from 6th grade through high school, or through 12th grade for, like, our summer reading project. I would just recycle the same entry about that book. I would love to be able to play a Stephen King game based around Faithful.
That'll be cool, so long as it's the Montreal Expos.
Oh, there you go. That's a throwback. Hey, they had Pedro there for a while, so key member of the...
I was thinking Christine. It's basically just Grand Theft Auto, but there are no people, like, driving you. You just are running people over.
Exactly. We actually have an article on our website, what would make the best Stephen King adaptation. And we have... I think it's Carlston who wrote these articles. He also wrote one about his favorite Stephen King adaptations. He put Christine at the top of the list. I wouldn't put it at the top of the list, but that is a severely underrated film. It's amazing. If you haven't seen it, if you like it, if you like Stephen King, watch Christine. Okay, question number 2.
Like John Carpenter.
Oh, yeah.
Carpenter. I love John Carpenter.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite John Carpenter films. Question number 2. If you had to destroy one amiibo... Which amiibo would you destroy?
Oh, you're freaking... Okay, so I'm looking at my desk right now, and I literally have every single amiibo that's not Animal Crossing. I'm going to make it tough on myself and pick one of those. I would have to say my most disappointed amiibo is probably my Sonic the Hedgehog amiibo. Sonic's nose is a little too big, like, and I just, if they could kind of remodel that one, I would be more on board. I love Sonic, so I would have to say they didn't do him justice with that amiibo.
And so the war between Nintendo and Sega fans begins again.
I would easily pick the original Peach amiibo. I really do not like that amiibo. Actually, that's like one of the last amiibo I purchased. Question number 3. What is your most anticipated game of 2017 that is not yet released, that is not Mario Odyssey?
Oh, okay, that was a gut punch, because I was going Mario Odyssey for sure. Let me take Fire Emblem Warriors. I'm a big Fire Emblem guy. Warriors does not look like it's going to be an amazing game, and yet it's Fire Emblem, so I'm naturally extremely excited for it.
Okay, so you know Miyamoto, right? Pretty cool dude. We all love him. He's like a god. Oh,
yeah, he's a good man.
He's great. So you have the choice. You can go play golf with Miyamoto, or you can go go-karting with Miyamoto, or you can go watch Super Mario Brothers, the movie, the original movie, with Miyamoto.
All right. That last one is a fantastic option. I'm going to go with golf, though, because 18 holes, you get to pick his brain. I'm going golf.
I also want to see Miyamoto slam a golf club into the grass when he misses a shot and yes. Break it over his knee.
Yeah, I need to see his temper. That's shanking one into the water.
Okay, question number 5, the very, very last question. Do you ever click on an article that says, you're not going to believe so-and-so?
Yes. I get got by those every now and again. I think it happens to everybody. Like, you're not going to believe what this child actor looks like now, and you're like, oh man, I remember that, like, that 70s show, like, what does Donna look like now? And then you click on it and it's an ad. But yeah, I get got by those. I gotta be honest.
I like the honesty.
Yeah. I think you passed. I think you passed with flying colors too.
All right. That was a little nerve-wracking there. I had to pull Faithful out. A Stephen King question was a tester. I'm not great with Stephen King yet. I want to go see it, though.
You gave the weirdest response to that question I think that could possibly be given.
Yeah, but it was. I think I'm the only person in the world who would have given that answer, to be honest, and I'm kind of proud of it because of
totally.
That.
Yeah. You could have also done, like, the worst possible answer and been like, oh, yeah, his book about writing. Just like, oh, that see them adapt that.
That would have been a good spin.
I just want to quickly say thank you to everyone who left feedback on my article, the article I wrote about my Switch breaking down. And someone, Tim, actually emailed me. And this is the amazing thing, because we are really bad. We never give out our email address or our Twitter handles at the start of the show. So his name is Anthony. And wouldn't you know, he lives in Montreal. He emailed me, asked me about the Switch. And so just to let the listeners know, first of all, if you do want to email us, the email to use would be editor@goombastomp.com. And to answer your question, Anthony, I have not yet received my Nintendo Switch back. In fact, the Nintendo Switch only arrived at Nintendo headquarters 2 days ago. So at this point, I think I'm going to be Switchless for the entire month of September. So yeah, it sucks.
Ouch.
Yeah. Anyhow.
That is a huge bummer.
Not good.
Yeah, we're all just sitting here in disbelief. Another thing we like to do on the show is every single week we like to go to iTunes and read a review from you, our faithful fans. Unfortunately, I cannot get iTunes to bring up the store on either my phone or my computer. So, yeah, definitely about to drop $1,000 on the iPhone X if I can't even get the iTunes store to work. That's encouraging, guys.
That sucks, because now the thing is, Tim, I don't know if you actually checked the ratings worldwide, because you have to actually change your country, but there was a new rating, or at least 2 new ratings from Canada. I cannot check iTunes right now because I'm recording. I will crash my computer. But I just want to say thank you to everyone who does leave us ratings on iTunes. Now, here's the thing. We started this podcast when Nintendo was, you know, nowhere to be found. Like, they released one game per like every like 6 months, and people thought we were crazy. And ever since the Switch got released, there's like a million Nintendo podcasts out there. Tyler. But the point is, before, we used to actually pop up on the iTunes store, but now there's so much competition. So if you really do like our show, we do put in a lot of hard work into the show. Give us a rating on iTunes, because trust me, it goes a long way. And it helps us get like review codes and invites to E3 and different events. And so it honestly makes my day every time we get a rating. So yeah, it honestly makes me feel better about myself, because, you know, I'm insecure. So that's it.
Well, without a Switch, too. I mean, that insecurity has got to be both, like, exponentially increased without being able to, you know, go back to the Switch and enjoy it as a safe space. So
this week specifically.
Yeah, I'm not cool anymore. Like, today.
This week specifically.
No, but today I was on the bus, and, okay, so twice on the bus, I saw someone whip out a Switch, and I was playing with my 3DS. Now, mind you, I was playing Metroid, but they don't know that. And they looked at me, and they had this smirk on their face, because, like, they had this Switch, and I'm still playing the 3DS, thinking that I don't have a Switch, which technically is true, because I don't have a Switch. I'm not the cool kid anymore. Sucks.
That's when you just need to be like, yeah, I'm playing Metroid. Come at me. But you do understand Metroid more than any of us here, because you have been playing it and you're free to talk about it now. So
yes,
Ricky,
sir.
Would you like to give your early impressions of Metroid?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, we're going to talk about it next week, so I don't want to take up too much time here talking about Metroid Samus Returns. You know, it's interesting because there's a lot of things I still can't say until the game gets released. The embargo was lifted on the 12th. I published my review a day late. Sorry, guys. I was busy. But I still couldn't, for example, talk about the ending. Not that I would talk about the ending and spoil it, but there's a few things I do want to let our listeners know. Number one, if you've never played a Metroid game, or at least the classic Metroid games, this is the perfect way to start, and I'll tell you why. The original Metroid game especially is super hard. Now, yes, on the Wii U, you know, if you're playing on the virtual store, you can, like, save it at any time, so that helps. Same applies to, like, Super Metroid, you know, like, those extra, like, save points. What do you call it? Like the restore points, I guess you call it? That clearly helps. It helps you as a player to finish the game. Because the original Metroid game, when it came out, I remember it was... Okay, I don't know if I told you the story on the podcast. I hated Metroid as a kid. Hated it. I only became a fan of Metroid after playing Super Metroid. The original Metroid, I could not finish for the life of me. It was a super hard game. It did not have a map. I did not have a strategy guide. I remember renting the game several times, could not finish it. I only went back and purchased the game after playing Super Metroid, which is one of my favorite games of all time. But the thing about this new game, Samus Returns, is the reason why I highly recommend it for people who have never played previous Metroid 2D side-scrollers, although, albeit, keep in mind, this game technically is 3D, right? It's because it does give the players the option to make the game easier. So there's one ability, for example, that Samus gets early on in the game. It's called the scan ability. And if you choose to use a scan ability, and this is entirely up to you, it's your choice, it'll show you secret hidden areas throughout the map. So as you're crawling around through the caverns, it'll show you exactly where you can blast through walls, for example. So, like, imagine playing the original Legend of Zelda game, and it shows you specific parts on the map that you can bomb, and there's, like, a secret passageway to meet the old man to buy, like, a sword or something, right? So, number one. Number two, there is tons and tons of checkpoints, which is great because there's a lot of backtracking, like most classic Metroid games, which can be frustrating, can be tedious, but you can save throughout the whole entire game at various spots. And if you do die, you know, it's not like you get sent back to, say, the beginning of, like, the stage and it takes you, like, 20 minutes to make your way back to where you died. Like, there's several checkpoints. And number three, it allows you to, like, teleport, and there's even, like, an elevator you can use. So it's just easier to move around in the actual, like, space, like, move around in the actual cavern on this, like, planet. So for that reason, I really, really recommend newbies start with this game, because I know a lot of people, like my nephew, for example, he wasn't really into the original Metroid games. And like me, he found it really, really hard. But this game sort of, like, resolves that. And again, it's an option. And I don't necessarily recommend you guys, because you guys know Metroid inside out, don't rely on the scan ability too early in the game. Like, try to figure things out yourself. It'll be a lot more fun. Now, I wrote this in my review, which, by the way, you should read, because Nintendo actually used my review to advertise the game, which is awesome. But what I really enjoy, the thing I enjoyed the most reviewing this game is, like, I've reviewed games ahead of release, But, you know, like sports games like NBA 2K, or even if you think of something like Uncharted, right, where it's like really simple. Like you have the story, you know where to go, what to do, etc. This game, it's sort of like a maze. It's like a typical Metroid game, like a classic Metroid game that requires you to explore every nook and cranny, uncover secrets, and find all of these like hidden areas, etc., etc. And it's really, really interesting to go back and play that type of game without having any sort of guideline, no strategy book, no Nintendo Power, no Let's Play, no walkthrough. I don't even have a friend who owns the game. It's not like I work at IGN. I can turn to like Brian Altano and be like, hey, I'm stuck. Can you help me out? No, nobody I know has the game, right? And I think that really boosted my enjoyment of playing the game because it made me feel like a kid again. Like it made me feel like the 10-year-old Ricky D who was playing Metroid for the first time and had no idea where to go and just had to figure things out by himself. And so that was a lot of fun. It was frustrating at times, but again, because the game does make it easier for you, it wasn't too frustrating. And so I just really enjoyed that experience. It was like pre-internet days, like before we could just turn to the internet and figure things out by going on YouTube. So that was really cool. The game itself, I mean, I would actually encourage people to read my review over at GoombaStomp.com. Look, it's a beautiful game. I think it's like one of the most beautiful looking games ever released on the Nintendo 3DS. Guaranteed, hands down. It's everything that fans want. Like, it moves, feels, looks like a traditional classic Metroid game. I really got to give props to Mercury Steam, the studio, the Spanish studio who made the game. Like, you know, I wrote in my review, I think it's criminal to call this like a remake. Like, I think that's simplifying things because it feels like they just reworked the whole entire game from the ground up. And there's clearly a lot of similarities to the original Metroid game, especially, for example, like the story, quote unquote, plot, what little of plot we do have. But it really does move and control great. And Patrick, and I think Tim, you guys played it too, right?
Yeah, I got to play a demo, like just very briefly part of the first world. But yeah, it controls awesome. And for me, that's always the number one thing in any game. And that's what made me so ultimately excited to play this again. I mean, I was excited for Metroid, obviously. But what made me not have to worry about it, I knew they'd knock it out of the park when I actually picked it up and played it, because it controls excellently. It's just fun to play.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are raving about the fact that Samus can aim in 360 degrees, which, you know, is cool. Like, all you have to do is hold the left trigger. It doesn't really come in too handy unless you're trying to, like, solve a puzzle. But I really love the melee attack. It's fantastic because it really does come in handy. Now, the thing is, I kind of feel like I overpraised the game in my review. As you well know, Patrick, I hate giving actual scores to reviews. I gave it a 9.2. And again, like I honestly just want to remove the score because I hate the idea of people looking at a score to sort of like figure out if they should play the game. You should actually read the article. But the one thing I will say, the only negative thing I will say, is it's sort of like Breath of the Wild in a sense that I just wish we had more variety when it came to the enemies we encounter. There's 40 Metroids that you have to destroy, which, by the way, I wrote this in my article too. Like, this game, you have to actually commit genocide on the Metroids. Like, you have to kill each and every single Metroid. Like, last Metroid standing needs to die, which is really brutal. And so you have to kill 40 Metroids, and I know that can sound tedious and repetitive, but the thing is, the Metroids evolve. So as the game progresses, the Metroids become bigger and evolve, and they become a lot tougher to defeat. So when you get to the first boss, it's really simple. Second boss, kind of simple. Third boss, but it increases. And it's great. It's great, you know, in terms of like the learning curve. Once again, if you're new to the Metroid series, it's the perfect game to start with. I could go on, but I feel like we should talk about this next week when you guys actually played it.
Yeah, which I cannot wait for. Again, this comes out on the 15th of September. Ricky, thank you for sharing your initial impressions. And you, listener, go read that review. It helps us a lot. Plus, it's just fun. Different voice.
I would like to think
the actual.
I would like to think that my review is somewhat poetic. I really poured my heart into this review. And I will say this. If you have played the original Metroid 2, it does sort of end this exact same way the Metroid 2 ends, but there's something else that happens, which I won't spoil. But regardless if you play the original end or not, there is still surprises for you at the end of the game. And it's awesome. And the boss battles are incredible. Trust me. You know what? You know what the problem is, Tim? The problem is this game should have been released on the Nintendo Switch. I mean, at least have the option for us to buy it on Switch or the 3DS. It's a real shame because this game is beautiful. It sounds great, and I just wish to God it was playing it on the Switch.
I've heard that quite a lot just because the 3DS, it looks good, but the Switch looks so much better. And sure, like, the 3D in this game, I can tell you, is amazing. Like, it looks just stellar is the proper word for Metroid because it's space, you get it. It looks amazing. And so I totally get it being on the 3DS. There's a bigger audience there and an audience that's been waiting for Metroid for a long time. So I understand it being on the 3DS, but I'm kind of with you, like, it would be really cool if we had a 2D Metroid to take it on the go. Like,
I know. Well, I mean, you could take it on the go, but the thing is I would love to see how this game looks on my big screen TV. Like, you know, I don't have this option. I hope they port it to the Switch in the near future, hopefully, maybe. At that point, I already own the game, so I don't think I would rebuy it. But, yeah, it looks good. It's a gorgeous-looking game. And, I mean, I haven't played every single game on the Nintendo 3DS because there's hundreds, if not thousands. But I'm willing to bet that this is one of the five best-looking, if not the best-looking.
I've gotten so taken by the Switch Pro Controller, too, that whenever I try to go back to a 3DS game, I just don't feel the same. Like, the Switch Pro Controller is so nice, and I'd love to play a game like this with that controller.
Oh, there's that one thing I will say, though. I have to say this. The 3DS version does have one major advantage, and it's the touch screen, the dual screen. Because we have the dual screen, we actually have the map at the bottom screen. So it's kind of like this exact same reason why I prefer playing Wind Waker on the Wii U, because you can actually refer to the Wii controller. The Wii U controller has the actual map, right? This is somewhat similar. Like, the actual dual screen provides a map, which you can turn to at all times. Also making the game a little easier when it comes to backtracking, because you can actually place markers on the map. So that's really good for someone like me who always gets lost. Like, even in real life, like, I'm so terrible with geography. Like, I've been living in the city of Montreal for like ever, and I still do not know where to go sometimes. So you can actually place markers, and it's so great to have the map at all times visible.
That is a big convenience. But in terms of porting it, I don't think that's the right solution. I think the right solution is release this, release Prime 4, and then let Mercury Stream create another 2D Metroid on the Switch, brand new game. No remake, no nothing, just like, hey, brand new 2D Metroid. I think it's one of those things that should carry on. You know, I don't think we should just have 3D or 2D. I think it needs to be both. So,
yeah, now we're talking. That's a good idea. No, I'm with you. That's great.
Like, Prime is great. I love Prime, but sometimes I'm like, you know what? I just want Super Metroid or Fusion or whatever I'm in the mood for. So,
if you like Super Metroid, I think that this game resembles Super Metroid in many ways. Like, although it's a remake of Metroid 2, it, like, they clearly were inspired by Super Metroid. Actually, there's this great video over at Game Informer where they compare the original Metroid 2 to Samus Returns to the fan-made game that got pulled by Nintendo. And it's really interesting to see them side by side and see how similar they are. Like, it's incredible how the fan-made game looks so similar to Samus Returns. Like, it doesn't look as polished, but in a way, I kind of like the look of that game better because it resembles more of the old Super Metroid-like visuals, like the style, the aesthetics. But in spirit and in tone, it does resemble Super Metroid in many ways. Which, by the way, Tim, is like maybe the third greatest video game ever made.
Oh, that's a little bit of a reach. Actually never played a 2D Metroid game from start to finish. I started Prime when I was young, and it was a little too challenging for me. So I'm actually, this will be my first full-blown Metroid game to actually play. But I don't know, Super Metroid's a top three?
Yeah, guaranteed, 100%. 100%. You know, Tyler, if you were to ask most of the Goomba Stomp crew, they would put Super Metroid on their top 5, top 10, guaranteed. I'm pretty sure Mike would put it number 2. I would put it number 3. Patrick would put it on top 5, if not higher. Super Metroid, you have to finish that game. It's unbelievable. Like, we're not going to talk about it today because we've already reviewed Super Metroid in the past. Our listeners can go back and check out the archive, but that game is unbelievable. It's fantastic.
I do actually have it. and part of my collection. I got it like a couple Christmases ago, and I haven't beaten it yet. I don't know if, I mean, you got A Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, Earthbound's my number one game of all time, and Donkey Kong Country 2 is actually one of my all-time favorites too. I just can't imagine Super Metroid's better than them, but I will have to go back and play it.
You're talking to the guy that puts like about 5 Super Nintendo games on the top 10 of all time, like my own personal list, and that includes A Link to the Past and Earthbound. But if I were to make, like, if I were to separate, say, best from favorite, because I think there's a difference, I would remove Earthbound from like the list of 10 best games ever made, because that's a personal favorite. But I would keep A Link to the Past and would 100% keep Super Metroid. But I'm glad you said Earthbound.
I could see that.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those
special.
It's one of those games. Super Metroid is always going to be one of those games that you can make the case for it being the greatest of all time. Obviously, the greatest of all time is a purely subjective thing, but it's a game that a lot of people can make the case for it, a legitimate case. Of course, you can always disagree with that, but I think you'll find a lot of people still will advertise that. So it's one of those games that there aren't too many games that has that have that kind of respect.
In terms of games being influential, it's one of the most influential games of all time. Guaranteed, hands down. It's up there with the past.
I always hate to rate something as being the best, even though it was influential. Like, I wouldn't put Citizen Kane up in the best movies of all time, but it's definitely one of the most influential movies of all time. I just don't think it's one of the best anymore. But Super Metroid holds up really well, whereas Citizen Kane I don't think holds up as well anymore. There are a lot of flaws. I think Super Metroid could come out tomorrow and people would still be saying it was an outstanding game in the Metroidvania, you know, say there was no Metroid, they would be an outstanding game in the Castlevania format. it still holds up.
You're talking about a game that created a subgenre and had hundreds of thousands of imitators that followed afterwards, and none of them are still better than Super Metroid. I mean, I'm not just talking about games like Axiom Verge, but even like Dark Souls Super Metroid was a heavy influence on that series. But here's the thing, Tyler, your homework for the week is go back and listen to our Metroid series and finish Super Metroid and come back and talk to me.
Yes, get out of here, Tyler. I will.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Tyler. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, I got some full report.
All right. That does it for that segment. Before we go way too down in the rabbit hole, that is Metroid. I think all Metroid fans are just extremely excited right now because it's back. And that's what we're getting the impression now, that Samus is back and hopefully not going anywhere. So knock on wood. Hopefully, Samus Returns is the absolute proper title for this game. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what else Nintendo has coming our way, as there was a Nintendo Direct, so don't go anywhere.
In the faraway land of Orstera, 8 travelers venture forth, step into their shoes, and explore the realm as you see fit. 8 brave souls, each with a unique talent. 8 lands, 8 stories to be told. So tell me, friend, what path will you tread? Embark on an adventure all your own. Project Octopath Traveler.
Welcome back to N-Express. We are at our middle segment, a discussion of the Nintendo Direct for September 14th, 2017. We are dating it. If you listen to this podcast years and years from now, you'll probably be laughing at us because you'll be like, man, they were excited for that. We've already got the sequel. But all the same, there's so much stuff that is really exciting and coming our way. And I was really, really happy just seeing this because it really felt like almost a goodbye to the 3DS. Like, there's still so much there, but you kind of get the sense that, like, we're getting the last titles of the 3DS, and there's clearly this transition onto the Switch happening, and everyone's hopping on board, and it's super encouraging. And we most recently got some very strong support from very unexpected sources. But Tyler, I've just got to ask, what was like the big takeaway for you? What were you just like, yeah, I can't wait for that? What was that game for you?
There was a lot of them, but I think, and most of us are probably going to be in a similar boat here. Super Mario Odyssey for me was the grand finale that I had hoped for. I know it's a reach to say, but I really think that this could be one of the greatest games ever made, just from what we're seeing before its release. The two new worlds that they showed, Shaveria and the Bablane, I believe it was called, the Seaside and Snow Kingdoms. Just the visuals had me so just taken aback, just how diverse they were, and just seeing Mario shiver. I can't wait for Super Mario Odyssey. The gameplay looks fantastic. It looks like these worlds are packed with hidden moons to find. They were touching on that a little bit, how they're everywhere. This is going to be one of those games that I sit down and just sink 100 hours into easily, playing through time and time again, because just everything about it really, really stuck with me. There's still the unfortunate image of Mario shirtless running around
We need to pause right now, because like, video game history is getting better documented as it goes, but unfortunately, people aren't exactly sure when Super Mario Bros. Actually came out. It's just a date that no one can confirm 100%. Like, this is the day that it came out, which is crazy if you think about it. But, listener, help us. September 14th, 2017, first time the world saw Mario shirtless. Did not think that was ever going to happen, but it did, and it definitely threw me off.
Yeah, it definitely was a little jarring. They have, like, a Fire Emblem has all these really detailed characters, and none of them have nipples, and yet Mario, he certainly does. So it seems like it scarred the world a little bit.
This could be the end of somebody's career.
I think it's hilarious that we did see Mario shirtless, but I think it's also even more funny that there's like 20,000 think pieces that got published yesterday night because Mario shirtless. But anyhow, yeah, I mean,
hey man, sex sells.
I also gave the wrong date. It definitely the 13th that we first saw Mario. Yeah. Shirtless,
so. I was about to say that. Yeah. Good job there, Tim. Which is why, yeah. It's funny that nobody knows when Super Mario Brothers actually got released. Like, does that mean that nobody knows when it actually got, like, the actual, the first day was sold in an actual store? Like, I'm confused about this. Like,
yeah.
Because didn't Super Mario come bundled? So it didn't come bundled with the original NES?
Or maybe I'm thinking of the arcade machine.
You're thinking of Mario Brothers, I think.
Is it Mario? Yeah, Mario Brothers.
The original.
Super Mario came launched with the NES.
With the NES, which people know when that came out. But first time Mario Bros. Showed up.
Although, did it come with the Famicom in Japan? I don't know if it was bundled with the I don't think it was bundled with the Famicom. I could be wrong about that, but
I have no idea. That I know they needed to bundle it in the U.S. just so people wouldn't. I don't know. They needed something for people to play. They were really trying to distance themselves from Atari and that whole video game crash. And, that's why they ended up like making sure that people had something to sort of see how it all worked. But, so Mario has nipples. It's official. We live in that world now.
Speaking of arcade games, so they're going to be releasing the Arcade Archives. And Patrick, does this give us a reason to finally review Ice Climber? Is Ice Climber part of the package?
Ice Climber is one of them, but it's not a package. They're selling them individually. I honestly thought that was the big dud of the presentation. Like, who cares about these old games still?
Wait, man, someone
out there is having like a heart attack that you're saying that.
I know.
Seriously, with all the stuff coming out, we're focusing on Ice Climbers and Mario Brothers? Like, who cares? I gotta say, I'm over those games.
I need to set the record straight. It's Balloon Fight versus Ice Climber, I think. Oh, no, it's not.
And Mario Brothers. Mario Brothers is the first
versus one. Balloon Fight. It's like a series of arcade games. I think they came out in, like, 85 or something that were, like, versus, so you could do it's a versus Super Mario Bros. I'm not sure how they exactly play, but I think you're competing against player two.
Yeah.
So wait, you're telling me that Nintendo is selling these games individually, each separate?
I believe so. They're probably like $5 a download.
What?
I don't know. I don't quote me on that price.
I thought it was a collection.
I think they're individual because Super Mario comes out first on September 27th.
And that's exactly right. They said Mario Brothers will come out first. So that tells me that they're all individual.
I thought it was like you buy the package and every week or every month they release a new game. It's sort of like DLC. I'm not paying $5 for any of these games. I'm sorry.
Hell no. No way. Like, I don't care. They're not different enough. I mean, it's still just Mario Brothers. Okay, it's the arcade version. So what? The one that looks the most different, I guess, is Punch-Out. But, and you know what? I'd only buy that so Soda Popinski's name would be his real name, Vodka Drunkinski. That's the reason to buy the arcade version of that.
I could see myself having, like, a stupid amount of fun with Ice Climber, though. I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's not going to be a great game. It's not a great game. No, I know it's a terrible game, but I feel like that could be where the fun is getting together with a buddy and just playing head-to-head Nana v. Popo Ice Climbers. I don't think it's a good game, but I just think there could be some fun to be had there. Now for, like, Mario Bros. And, like, Clue Land, like, I don't really see it. But a game like Ice Climber that's just so off the wall, I don't know. I do think that there's a strange appeal there.
I think that if you're really interested in the video game industry, like if you want to be a journalist and or a critic, like I think there's value here. Like you want to go back, especially to young kids. I mean, this is before my time, but if you've never played these games, you want to kind of go back and see what it was like and maybe even like get an idea of what it was like playing video games back in the days and write about it. But I'm saying is like $5 a game. Or I mean, I know, Patrick, you're just making up a number, but like, if they sold an actual package, like it would be interesting to buy a package and sort of experiment with these games. But I'm just wondering, like, do you guys recall a game called the NES Remix? Like, what happened to the fans demanding the Super NES Remix? Instead, we're getting the Arcade Archives.
They're going backwards.
Instead, we're getting the mini. We're getting the mini NES.
But that's not the remix. The whole point of the remix was to do crazy stuff in those old games, and it was pretty fun. What I found odd is how much time they devoted to this thing in their direct. Like, this should have been something that just came out as a tweet. That's about all the attention it deserved.
It's one of those things that, like, there is something to be said about experiencing the original, experiencing, like, where something started, the roots of something. Like, but at the same time, we were just talking about Metroid as an example. Yeah, if you want to really explore the roots of Metroid, give the original Metroid a shot. And then immediately play Metroid Zero Mission, because it's basically the same thing, only way better. Like, that's kind of that's how video games are now. So, like, yeah, you could play the arcade version or go play Super Mario Bros. Yeah, I already have it, and it's better, so...
I got to tell you, I was a little worried when they started talking about that. I was like, uh-oh, this isn't going to be a very good direct. Luckily, it did get much better.
Dude, yeah, they were like, hey, Tim, have some new Pokemon. That's what's up.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking of you, Tim, when they were going
through all the Pokemon stuff.
So yeah, so Tim, you're like the biggest Pokemon fan on our website, so talk about it. Let's hear it.
So the important thing to note, you guys, is that at no point has a Pokemon game that has been like the follow-up to a generation, the third version, if you will, the yellow, the crystal, whatever you want to call it, that third version or the sequels, they never have new Pokemon. They might have new forms, and there might be a mythical Pokemon release that you get through distribution. You have to go to GameStop or whatever. Sure, that happens, but we've never actually just gotten straight new Pokemon. And so this is something new, and this is exciting to me. Like, sure, it's the reason that they're trying to get me to spend $40 and it's working. Like, yeah, that's part of it. But it's still exciting. There's more to see. There's more in the game. Like, on top of, like, yeah, cool surfing area, whatever, Pikachu playground, I don't care. But there's new Pokemon to collect. And that's a first time. It's fun.
Did you notice that they're selling a Pokeball-themed 2DS XL system? I mean, like, it's like every single week they release a new special edition of the 2DS or the 3DS. And I'm like, man, you know, like, we sort of poke fun at Nintendo for doing this, but maybe they're actually still selling a shit ton of these systems and we just don't know about it because, let's face it, the Switch isn't available anywhere. Maybe people are still just buying the system.
I feel like they're just going out with that bang. You know what I mean? They're like, they're getting all they can out of the system. I think we're going to get full support through 2018, and then it's just going to be full Switch. I think next E3, we probably won't hear anything about the 3DS. It's going to be all Switch.
Speaking of Switch, I would switch the Arcade Archives with Mario Party Top 100. Put the Mario Party Top 100 on Nintendo Switch and put the...
That is a great point. Why? I was thinking this too, because it's cool that, yeah, everyone owns a 3DS, and it's kind of fun that we're getting a collection of the best 100 minigames from all of Mario Party, all of them, on one collection. That's a cool set. That's a cool idea. And then they put it on the 3DS. That had me like, do you want to put it on the old console or the brand new exciting console?
Yeah, that was a gigantic buzzkill for me because I love some Mario Party. Like, Mario Party 2 is one of my... I probably sank more time into that game than the rest of the N64 library. Like, and to see some of those minigames coming back was really exciting. I mean, it was perfect for Switch. Then they tagged 3DS, and it's kind of... Am I really going to get it? The Mario Party games for the 3DS are never as good as the Mario Parties for the actual consoles, although I guess, you know, that kind of... They haven't been good for a little while. But if it was on Switch, I would have definitely been like a day one top four announcement in this direct for me. But that 3DS thing kind of just throws a little monkey wrench into how much, if I'm going to get it or not. You know, I might not go for it because I just can't see my friends all buying it as well. Whereas on the Switch, they absolutely would.
It's still cool.
This is the worst decision Nintendo's made this year. I mean, I put this above the 1-2 Switch. We get 1-2 Switch on the Switch, which nobody cares about. But Mario Party, the top 100, like probably the best party system game that Nintendo has this year, they put it on the 3DS, not on the Switch, which makes a better party system. It makes no sense. Like, again, why don't you give us the option? I can't imagine it being hard to port this game to the Switch. Options, people. Options, Nintendo.
Yeah, speaking of options, we got a choice of 8 million different JRPGs. Like, there are a lot coming.
Octopath looked fantastic. I haven't gotten the demo yet, but that looked excellent.
That looks, I don't know, I almost want to put that as like my biggest takeaway from this direct was Project Octopath Traveler. Very Square Enix name, so good job, Square Enix. Keep at it. I believe in you.
Working title.
Yeah, it's a great working title, though.
It is. Can they just remove it and make it the final title? Like, I'm down for that really weird name.
Is it the working title? Like, let's be real.
It is.
Do I need to quote Kingdom Hearts titles at you right now?
I don't like the title, guys. Like, I know your buddy Ryan was on Twitter, and he was telling me that he actually loves the title because it feels like in a tradition of, like, a Square Enix title. Like, but I still do not like the title. Like, I'm not saying, like, I don't care if they give us something else that's bizarre, but there's something about it I just don't like.
Okay, but regardless of the title, that game looks freaking incredible. Like, that was the game I am most excited for now after seeing the direct. Like, I cannot wait. I'm not even going to bother with the demo because I don't want to spoil anything. That game looks like pure magic. I cannot wait to play that.
It's funny
Like, Xenoblade looks great. That's the RPG, though, that I'm most excited for is Octopath.
I'm right there with you.
I think we're all there. Like, something about, first of all, that aesthetic. Like,
oh, gorgeous.
That is so cool.
I don't know what HD 2D is, but I need it in every video game. Like, every game can be an HD 2D. I'll be happy.
I'm so glad you said that because I was confused when they said HD 2D. I'm like, what does that mean? Patrick, I just got to quickly cut in. I really think you should play the demo because they're allowing players, like fans, to provide feedback. So, like, you can actually provide feedback and give them really cool ideas to make this game actually better. This is a great reason to have a demo.
And you know what I'm going to do? Is tweet at them, hey, how about you release Kingdom Hearts 3, you jackasses?
I'm sure you won't be alone in that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to. I'm not so much up for feedback because I think that fan feedback can sometimes ruin things. I just want to let Square create what they create. So far, they seem to be on a pretty good path, a pretty good octopath by themselves.
Nice.
That game just it blew me away at how pretty it looks and just how it brought me back to like those days of playing Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah.
Yet with a total modern sensibility. Ugh,
and that's the HD 2D thing. It like extended not only graphically, but into gameplay. That's what it was. It was a modern game with the sensibilities of an old game. Like it's a standard JRPG with new mechanics that you would see in a new game. But But rather than being 3D and about driving a car with your boy band, it's a very traditional JRPG.
But I don't understand how high definition 2D improves the gameplay.
No, it improves the visuals as far as I'm concerned. I just think it's a coin for having the pixelated look.
Yeah.
While still being HD. I really don't care what it means. I just know that it looks really, really cool.
It adds a lot, I think, to the universe as well. Like, I don't know, you guys, I know Patrick played I Am Setsuna a little bit, and that game was one where the visual presentation really actually kind of made the game enjoyable. I felt like it wasn't that great of a game, but its visuals were fantastic and it just kind of sucked you into the world. I think that this kind of has a similar aesthetic where I feel like it's going to kind of tie in with the story a little bit and create this, I don't know, prettier picture once the game comes out.
Yeah, hopefully it's better than I Am Setsuna, because that game is, if you just took a straight up look at it, it's one of the most boring RPGs of all time.
Yeah, like I agree.
It's so linear, but it is kind of nice to look at. It's got a good atmosphere. That's the only thing that kept me playing it.
That's not really a good reason to play the game if it's not fun to play. But no, this game is.
I wouldn't recommend it.
This game is built has a mixture of CG, pixel art, and visual wizardry. So there's clearly magic behind the making of this game. Just saying.
Well, it's a team that did Bravely Default too, which is one of the best RPGs you can get on 3DS. So they know what they're doing. I agree with Patrick a little bit. I'm a little nervous about the fan feedback because I trust this team.
And yeah. I want them to keep approaching things this way, where they have their separate team that is dedicated entirely to making classic-feeling JRPGs. And that's kind of what people want more than they want. I don't know, I could be overstepping here, and if I'm generalizing too much, cut me off. But, like, I don't know, I was kind of excited by Final Fantasy XV, and then the more I saw, the more I was just like, I don't know, this isn't what I remember. And then they release something like this, and I'm stoked out of my mind. They release something like Bravely Default, and I'm like, yeah, cool, classic JRPG, all about it. And then they also have, like, Lost Sphere is also looking kind of promising, because it's also very classically oriented. And
it's very Setsuna.
It is.
Exactly. I mean, it's the same people, right? So it makes sense.
I think the thing is that when you get these kind of games, like, I could be wrong, but it seems like they're focusing on the actual game, meaning, like, is it going to be fun to play? Are people going to be, like, invested into, like, while playing this game from start to finish? I mean, I think simplicity goes a long way, and that's one of the reasons why I love Metroid Samus Returns, because they keep it simple. Like, they don't have, like, extended cutscenes with cheesy dialogue and voice work, you know, which we've seen in some Metroid games. Like, they kept it simple. They kept the old spirit of the original Metroid games, and it feels like, I mean, who said Final Fantasy VI? I mean, when watching this, it felt like an old school Final Fantasy game, and I think like people actually like. I mean, there's just so many games coming out, guys, and there's so many games that are just so long and time-consuming. Like, we always talk about The Witcher, like, one of the greatest games I've ever played, but so incredibly time-consuming. I've only got a certain amount of time for each and every single one of these games. I think this is going to be a long game, but still, it's a different kind of, like, RPG in the sense that it's going back to its old-school roots. I agree with you guys. This was, like, the highlight of the Direct. I could have used two more minutes of this game and about four minutes less of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which, by the way, I'm excited for it, but there was a problem with the presentation for Xenoblade Chronicles 2, a big problem. And one of the problems was the voiceover, the narrator, who put me to
sleep. The narrator
was
quieter than the music, too. Like, do you guys notice that the music was drowning him out?
You know, I didn't mind it. I know everybody really didn't like the narrator. I mean, I didn't love him. I didn't mind it, though. It was all right to me.
It was a little too precious, but I did not have a problem with him either. I thought it kind of fit the flavor of what was going on. I didn't hate it or anything, that's for sure.
I felt like it just slowed down the pacing of the Direct. It wasn't like, I mean, look, I didn't hate it. I just kind of felt they could have done a better job. But it was, I believe, 8 minutes long. Like, 8 minutes of the Direct was focused on Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which is great. I'm excited for this game. I'm excited it's coming out December 1st. Guys, this is a banner year for Nintendo. People are going to look back, and they might actually think that this is, like, the best year Nintendo's ever had. Between Odyssey, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which, by the way, I know some people who have already played the game are saying it's absolutely incredible. You got Zelda, of course. You got even a game like Mario plus Rabbids, which we're going to talk about after the break. There's just so many. Metroid, Samus Returns, there's so many great games. It's such a good year to be a Nintendo fan, plus a new console.
It could be the best Nintendo year of all time. I don't think that's an overstatement.
You didn't even say Splatoon and ARMS, which were just like the summer candy that we got. Am I right? Bright, colorful, just right.
Splatoon is actually Ricky said it in the last show. I've been trying to get back into that for so long, and yet it just keeps not happening because there's so many other games that are coming out that you kind of just have to keep, okay, on to the next one, on to the next one after playing the one that just came out for a little while. So,
yeah, no, I totally get that.
That's a problem with a game like Splatoon. Like, if you're playing like a game like Super Mario Odyssey, like, you have a set goal. You're going to want to finish the game from start to finish, all these areas to explore. You know what to do. A game like Splatoon, you basically go online and maybe hopefully play with your friends, but we're not going to get into like that right now. Like, we've already talked about it enough on the podcast. And it doesn't really give you the same ambition or drive to really want to put Splatoon in when you know you still have, say, Mario plus Rabbids to finish and or Zelda or what have you, right? It's a different kind of feel. Like, when I put in Splatoon, it's because, I don't know, like, hopefully I have someone to play with. But anyhow, I honestly, guys, I think I gave up on Splatoon. Like, I don't think it's for me. And it doesn't help that my Nintendo Switch broke, so I can't even play the game. I think by the time the Switch comes back, I'm going to have, like, a backlog of games for the Switch that I'm going to want to play, and I don't see myself playing Splatoon for the rest of the year, which is really unfortunate, but so be it.
A guy who didn't play Splatoon 1, who bought it, I bought it day one, and it sat because I'm a big Smash player, and I just kept playing Smash instead. I implore you to reconsider that. Splatoon 2 is fantastic. I like it perhaps more than Breath of the Wild. It's right there. It's a totally different experience, obviously, but it's one of those games that you can keep going back to, like, after you walk away from for a while. I feel like it'll kind of be served like my Smash Bros. When there's a drought in the Switch lineup, I pop back into Splatoon 2. It is really one of the, it's that good.
It's made it into my permanent rotation. Sure.
I feel like I'm already too far behind. I mean, because the game came out and then we had a review like so-and-so game. So I ended up like being distracted from like not just Nintendo games, but even something like Uncharted. And now my Switch is gone for like a whole entire month. By the time it comes back, I mean, I don't have any of the special weapons. I'm not powered up or leveled up. Like, most of my friends don't play the game, or it's impossible to find them online to play the game with. So I just feel like by the time it comes back in October, plus with the backlog, it's not that I don't want to. Look, I spent a lot of money on that game. I'm going to try. I promise you. I will try. I don't see myself really getting wrapped up in Splatoon 2 play in October.
Well, as long as you try, that's all I can ask.
There's a lot of stuff coming out, too. That's the thing. Like, I might be done with Splatoon 2 as well. I mean, obviously, I was never huge on it. And Tim, no, I still have not reached level 10. And honestly, at this point, I just don't care anymore. Like, it may still happen before some of the other big games come out this fall. But there are so many games coming out this fall that why would I waste my time in Splatoon 2 anymore when I wasn't really enjoying it that much in the first place anyway? So, yeah, I might be done with it. There's just too much else that looks awesome that's coming out.
It's tough to dedicate any time to something that's foreseeably endless. That is contradictory, but you know what I mean? Like, there is no end to Splatoon, really. It's an online shooter, and like, I'm constantly juggling Overwatch and Destiny now and Splatoon. And so it's like, yeah, definitely it's going to undulate. It's going to be sometimes I'm playing Splatoon and sometimes I'm on one of the other games, but I think that's kind of a good way to enjoy it is I don't dive in too deep ever. I come out, play something else, and then go back in, and I find myself just as happy as when I first discovered it. So,
you know, the Switch is in such a different position than the Wii U was because I had to give games on the Wii U more of a chance. But after Splatoon 2 basically left a bad taste in my mouth right away, I don't need it anymore. There's tons of other games out there for me to play, so I don't have to go back to it anymore. And that's why it's just basically going to collect dust. I just think that's it's a great problem to have. Like, doesn't matter. Nintendo still got my money. I bought Splatoon. I will probably sell it. Because I highly doubt I'll ever pop it in again. But it's just a little bit different situation. If this was the Wii U, you know, these things that annoyed me about the game right off the bat, it doesn't really have a second chance at a first impression, whereas games on the Wii U did, because there wasn't really a whole lot else going on. So I guess I might as well continue playing this thing.
That's kind of been ARMS for me. Like, they, in the direct, they announced that the version 3.0 is out with Lollipop. And I really was excited for ARMS when it came out, and I do enjoy it to on some level, But I kind of thought that Lollipop would get me back into that game, and it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but I think the thing about ARMS is the kind of game I can play on the go, and I also think it's a great game to play with people. Like, I actually, when I was working at the digital media camp during the summertime, I would bring my Switch to work all the time, and the kids would always want to play ARMS, and it was so great to play, like, multiplayer, like, especially four players. But, I mean, Tyler, like, you're a huge fan of basketball, as am I. NBA 2K18 gets released tomorrow. You know, like, there's so many games to think of, and, like,
right.
Tim, like, when you talk about a game not having, like, an end goal and just being sort of, like, seemingly, like, endless, like, I think that doesn't really appeal to me unless it's a sports game. Like, that's why I don't play Destiny or Overwatch. I totally understand these games are fantastic, and that includes Splatoon 2. I just don't think I'm right for it because I've tried many times. But here is my question. The reason why I bring up NBA 2K18 is, can someone please explain to me why it only comes out on the Switch October 17th? It comes out, I think, on the eShop tomorrow, but for some reason it's delayed. It's weird.
The physical copy is delayed, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It probably has something to do with... I'm guessing that they started developing it for the other consoles first, and this was sort of a late development for them when they finally learned what the Switch was. So I don't know if there's been some sort of production delay or whatever, getting it optimized for the Switch, and they've got it ready now, finally, so that it can release on time digitally, but they weren't able to actually put it into production for physical copies yet because it went down to the wire. Who knows?
I can only hope that it's because the Switch physical version will include a downloadable code that lets you play as LeVar Ball. that's something that we all need, is to play as LeVar Ball. I think we all want to be big ballers here, and my guess.
Do we want to play as him or against him?
Oh, we got to play. He's got to be the cover athlete for the Switch. That would be like him dunking on Jordan. Like, is Jordan's too small?
That would be hilarious. We got to sort of like speed things up. But Tim, I really want you to talk about a specific game because you've actually played it. And Nintendo actually did a good job of showcasing Murphy's Law during Nintendo Direct. Impressions?
I actually haven't played Murphy's Law. I was just excited about it. It was at the Nindy Night in Seattle, but it wasn't at the Nindy Arcade at PAX. So it's one of those games, though, that I'm excited for. I'll check it out, but you always have to be really cautious about, like, arcade shooters, if that makes sense. The eShop shooters. There's just something that there's generally not going to be as much balance in the game. It's going to be kind of a niche audience, and how many people are going to get into it. So matchmaking is an issue always. So,
oh, I'm sorry. It's because for our listeners who don't know, we recorded a whole entire segment about PAX, which we sort of lost. It was we lost the last 20 minutes of our previous podcast. So I just completely cut out that entire segment, but there was a game that you were raving about, and I thought it was this game, but it's not.
No.
It's the game about the wizards.
It's Nine Parchments, yeah.
Okay, so since tell our audience times about this. We need our listeners to know about this game.
Yeah, Nine Parchments is a twin-stick shooter, a cooperative twin-stick shooter, where you're not shooting guns, you're shooting magic, and everyone in it is a wizard with sort of different talents and focuses, but there is a ton to unlock, a ton to customize, and it was a genuinely but funly, like, challenging game. There were so many times that I felt the sort of heat of, like, yeah, this battle could best me, and it's not even a boss fight. And that's something that's kind of cool when you're working all together, and it definitely required communication and teamwork in a really, really fun way. And so I think this is going to be one of the coolest indie games in a long time that I've ever seen. It is gorgeous. The settings are beautiful. It's one of those games that I am just kind of floored that an indie studio was capable of this level of quality. Like, everything about the game is fantastic. There's so much attention to detail. It just feels really great to play. And I'm always a sucker for a co-op game, but man, was this like co-op at its best. I loved it. Ryan is my co-host at Game Boy's All About Co-op on this year's site, Goomba Stomp. we went and back and played it like two or three more times after our first taste, because we were like, this game is so fun. I can't wait for it to come out. So definitely get it on the Switch.
And Frozen Byte, they're visually, like, they're good. If you played Trine, you know that they can create beautiful worlds. Like, they already have a lot of experience with rich visual experiences.
Yeah, and this is just, it's a cut above everything else out there. I don't know what it is about the game, but I was just having so much fun with it. It is definitely challenging and definitely requires multiple players, but they have said that there's going to be a online play, so you'll be able to get online and play with friends, and I think it's going to be a huge hit. It was so much fun.
All right, so before we get to Xenoblade, let's just quickly go over the list and see if there's anything we want to mention really quick. For example, is anyone excited about Wolfenstein and or Doom getting released on the Nintendo Switch?
Moderately, emotional level, like, it's a Bethesda game coming to Switch, like, that's huge, but am I actually pumped to play the games? Not as much.
Yeah, and I think that's it. It fills a need for the Switch, first-person shooters, of which there are none. So, like, you definitely got to have these things on there, but it's a signal. It's a signal that bigger developers are starting to buy into the system and more testing the waters. So, in that sense, it's a great thing. I think it's amazing. It's incredible that they're getting Wolfenstein on there, because I'm assuming Wolfenstein was designed from the ground up for more powerful consoles. So the fact that they can get it running on the Switch is pretty incredible. And, you know, Doom, I'm willing to try it out. I'm willing to play that.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you should. It's amazing. It's amazing. Seriously.
Yeah.
See, it's great for people who don't own a PlayStation and or an Xbox. Like, it's fantastic. Like, it gives people an option to buy these games. I'm, honest to God, more excited about Skyrim. I tweeted about this yesterday. Confession time, I've never played Skyrim. I've seen my friends play it. I've watched Grandma Shirley play it. She's amazing. But I've never actually played it, right? And so, I mean, clearly I can play Skyrim on my Xbox, and maybe I should, but there is that appeal of playing Skyrim on the go. I mean, Tyler, I was listening to your podcast, and you said the thing about the Nintendo Switch is it seems really targeted towards an older crowd, in the sense that, you know, people who get older become busier with jobs and they travel, and, you know, that's sort of like me, right? Like, I can't afford to be at home for like 8 hours in front of my TV playing Skyrim, but I can play it on the go. So I'm glad these games are on the Switch. I'm glad this company's actually supporting the Switch. It's not sort of like one company that is testing the waters and they drop one game, and it's not even like the full version to kind of see how it sells before they really commit to the Switch. Like, these guys are committing to the Switch, and I love the fact that they're committing to the Switch. I'm also glad we got a lot of Kirby Star Allies, which, by the way, gets released next year, right? So I think it's like next spring.
Next spring.
So at least we got a Kirby game next year. It's interesting. Like,
we get Yoshi next year too.
We get Yoshi, yeah. So within 2 years, all of the major Nintendo IPs will have a brand new game available on the Switch, except for Metroid.
Kid Icarus.
Yes, Kid Icarus. Even if it's Kid Icarus Uprising, like 1.5, I love that game on 3DS.
That game is so good.
Yep.
It's like, it's probably the most underrated game on
3DS. It's also one of the funniest games I've played in so long.
Like, by the way, we missed L.A. Noire is also coming out on the Switch. So Rockstar putting something out on the Switch is pretty big news as well. And granted, they are just testing the waters with one game, but having Rockstar put a game out on a Nintendo console that, I mean, they did one on the 3DS, but that's it. Like, or was it the DS? I think they did it on the DS.
Maybe I'm alone here, but I would have been so much more excited if they were just like, Red Dead Redemption 1 is coming to the Switch.
I was going to say that same thing.
I was not excited about L.A. Noire when it came out. I'm still not going to play it when it comes to the Switch. Red Dead Redemption, I never played, but I would totally give a shot. But, you know, I'm not going to go play my 360 anytime soon, so I don't know.
Red Dead would be much more exciting. I think L.A. Noire, it's been out for a while. I actually played it on 360. And once you know how the crimes kind of unfold, that game doesn't have the same draw to come back to. Whereas if they said Red Dead, I think a lot of people, much like with Skyrim, people who already own the game would go, oh, man, this is perfect, though. I got to get this on the Switch. I mean, the game's been out for a long time. It's kind of in the rearview mirror. But it's perfect to kind of bring it back now, especially with them working on Red Dead 2. I think it'd be a perfect combination thing.
Well, here's the thing. So Skyrim was announced by Bethesda a long time ago, but then all of a sudden they jumped on board with two more games. So maybe the hope is that Rockstar, yeah, they're testing the waters with L.A. Noire, and then maybe they'll jump on board with a couple of other games as well later. Who knows? Might get Grand Theft Auto 5 as well.
It makes sense. They were doing their HD remake of L.A. Noire, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, look, I think the thing is, it's clear that any game from the previous generation can be ported to Nintendo Switch, but I can't see Red Dead Redemption 2 fitting on the Nintendo Switch.
Probably not.
The original game, I mean, look, there's no reason for a company not to release the game on the Switch if they can make money off of it, right? I mean, there is that argument to be made, like, do you want the company to sort of dumb down the game, or I hate using the word dumb down the game, but not give you the full package because it can't fit for the Nintendo Switch? But, I mean, you know, honest to God, guys, some people just can't afford to buy more than one console. So it's not a bad thing. Like, chill. So, yeah. And Tyler, in your podcast, you said that Skyrim would sell how many copies?
I was going to open this up to you guys. I think 2 million is reasonable. I mean, it sold 32. It sold 32 million copies. As of right now, across PC, PS3, Xbox, I don't think that it's that much of a reach to say it could carve out, you know, 1/15 of its sales could be on Switch. I at this point in the release, I think that I am confident that there is a chance.
I think they'll be happy with like 500,000. I think they'd be ecstatic with that.
Really? I mean, yeah. I could be completely off base, but come call me up when it sells 2 million
We will have you back on the show just strictly to apologize.
Okay, so I'm gonna explain to you why I think you're wrong. I think you could be right had Skyrim had been released already, but Skyrim is getting released in between. It's getting sandwiched in between Super Mario Odyssey and Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Now, Super Mario Odyssey, guys, it looks like it's going to be the largest Mario game ever. I mean,
Mario Breath of the Wild. Like, yeah, called it that on the E3 episode, and it is, for sure.
I think the rumor is 600 moons hidden in the game.
Yeah, so this game gets released October 27th, Mario. And then Xenoblade Chronicles gets released December 1st. And then Skyrim, I believe, gets released in November, correct?
Yes.
I kind of feel like it's not a big enough window. Like, I feel like those few of us who have a Nintendo Switch, there's only a certain percentage of us that actually want to buy Skyrim because we haven't played it yet. And then of those people, there's only a certain percentage of us that can afford it and or have the time. I kind of hear what you're saying. I do think it's possible for maybe Skyrim to approach the 1 million mark on Nintendo Switch, not anytime soon, maybe when they actually have more Nintendo Switch in stores to sell people. Like, you know, there's only been 5.2 million units sold, right? So, like, you're pretty much saying that
only 5.2 million.
Well, no, but when we're talking about 2 million in sales, that's you know,
that is an enormous install rate. Yeah.
I'm saying lifetime, though, and they're going to be selling a ton at holiday. I think they're trying to get up to what, 10 million, is it?
No, they pushed that up. I think they said they want to hit 14 million now.
If they come close to that, I think that, honestly, this could just be absolutely not me just being completely off base, but I think that Skyrim will be a bigger game than Xenoblade Chronicles 2 this year, because I think that more people recognize the Skyrim name, and when they're buying games this holiday, they're going to get the Switch, and they're going to see Skyrim, and they're going to go, oh man, either parents are going to go, I've heard of Skyrim, they're going to grab it. Or it's going to be somebody who's played Skyrim like 4 years ago and go, oh man, this would be great for the Switch. Even if they don't even play it that much, it has that name recognition and people know its quality. Well, that's kind of where I'm coming from.
There's that mind-bending aspect on the go. Like,
exactly.
I sunk so much time on Skyrim, but you know what? If I can suddenly now play it on the bus, that's fascinating. And, you know, for a game that you can literally save anywhere, stop playing anytime, that's perfect for on-the-go play. Tyler might not be that far off, you guys.
No, I think the 2 million is reaching for it, but I don't think that he's necessarily wrong about it beating Xenoblade. Xenoblade's not a very popular... It wasn't a very popular franchise the last two times around, so I don't think they're projecting a ton of sales for Xenoblade 2. It's a flagship entry in their holiday season, but it still isn't, it is a niche audience. Like the thing about Xenoblade 2 is it looks beautiful, like absolutely gorgeous, just like Xenoblade X did, but it looks super complicated and involved, and I don't know what I'm going to be doing at that point in time. How many games I'm going to be playing? Do I really want to launch into a 100-hour thing? You know, and Zelda Breath of the Wild DLC might be out by then, too, so.
Right, true, true.
I got two things to say before I move forward. So, okay, so because Tyler said lifetime, you could be right, because the Nintendo Switch is on pace to becoming Nintendo's, like, biggest selling console of all time, right? It could be possible that 2 million people buy Skyrim on Nintendo Switch, guaranteed. But if you're saying, like, within the first year, hell no. Also, it's because...
Oh, again, I'm not saying within the first... Yeah, lifetime.
Yeah, okay, because it gets released November 17th, and that's way too close to Mario. We're talking about, like, 20 days. No one's going to finish Odyssey within 20 days. And Patrick, to go to your point, I thought the exact same thing, but December 1st is perfect. Like, we do get busy around Christmas time, but, you know, it is the holiday season, and that's the perfect time for me to sit down and play Xenoblade Chronicles 2 during my two-week winter break. So that is why I'm excited for it, because it's not coming out in, like, say, for example, June, when I want to be outside playing basketball. It's coming out in the winter time. This is perfect. All right. Anything else before we move forward?
So I think
we should probably move on at this point.
We should move on, but I think we need to raise the stakes a little bit and maybe take a bet on
Skyrim. Listen, everybody but Tim needs to apologize to me if I'm correct, because, well, Tim was the first to say Tyler could be right.
Why don't we go ahead and just, like, make this worthwhile for everyone and just say that loser has to cosplay the red-haired chick from Xenoblade 2, right?
Yes. Yeah, that sounds fair.
That will be impossible to enforce, and therefore I like your bet.
Her super ridiculous anime outfit, like, tons of midriff, tiny shorts.
It's an interesting leggings. Costume she has.
It still looks great. It looks like a confusing Xenoblade game, but it looks beautiful, and I'm sure the combat's just as fun as X was.
I should just remind people there's not one, but two Kirby games coming out next year. We forgot about Kirby Battle Royale, but it doesn't matter because we do have to move forward. So
we're going to take a break. When we come back, N-Express is going to cover Mario plus Rabbids, so don't go anywhere. Welcome back to N-Express. We're at our main event, a discussion of Mario plus Rabbids, a game that is already out on the Switch and is actually pretty good. So, Ricky, was it last week you were talking about this?
I haven't had a chance to play the game because I bought it the exact same day my Switch broke, and so therefore I don't have a Switch to play the game. So I'm going to go silent and listen to you guys review the game, because I really, really want to play the game, and what has me the most interested is the soundtrack, to be honest, but I need to hear what Tyler and Patrick have to say, because I still have it, and I can still return it, but I kind of feel like I shouldn't, because it looks fantastic.
All right, so I'll lead this one off. This is a game that I basically bought just to review for the podcast, because I thought it would be a shame if we didn't cover Mario plus Rabbids, since it was one of the big releases, and no one didn't seem like anybody else was going to buy it, so... And even I wasn't going to. I think, Rick, I even messaged you that day, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to. And then I happened to be near a GameStop, and I thought, ah, screw it. I'll just buy this stupid thing. But it was one of those things where, like, all right, I liked it at E3, but I was just sort of, this isn't my genre. Even though I love the puzzle genre, I'm not necessarily that great at the strategy genre. And I've played a couple of these games before that are games that were similar to this. Codename Steam is kind of a similar game. And I just wasn't very good and didn't have a whole lot of fun playing it. It's just not for me. But I thought, all right, I'll get into it. And as I played it, as I started out, I thought it was a good game. It you know, introduces you well into the techniques and everything like that. And it all seemed very manageable. And there are skill trees and all that kind of stuff, but it's not like they're a big deal. They're not too much to handle, to manage, you know. There's some very user-friendly options that we can get into later. The design on this is very, very conducive to beginners, I think, or people that aren't familiar with the genre. So I'm about three quarters of the way through. I have not beat the game yet. But about halfway through the game, I realized I'm starting to really, really like this game. I am super into this game and having a great time. Even when I get my butt kicked on a battle, I never feel like I can't come back and do a different strategy. I never feel like I'm overwhelmed or like I have no solutions to the problem out there. There are a couple times where I've just restarted a battle immediately because I made one wrong move and I'm like, oh, that's going to suck. And it was almost like, or I do that to test the waters. I make
absolutely. I've done the same thing.
Make a character move forward, see what the other guys are going to do. And then I restart the battle after I get slaughtered. and then I go into it again with a little bit wiser of a strategy. I am really, really liking this game quite a bit. Not just for the strategy stuff, though. The battles are very fun. They're challenging just the right kind of challenge where everything seems totally doable and yet is not just a walk in the park. And it's progressively getting better and better, unlocking better weapons, you know, and more powers and figuring out how I can stack up attacks. It's really, really gratifying when you can chain things together, when you start figuring out techniques for that. But it's not just the battles. I really love the overworld of this game. I love walking around and uncovering every secret. I've spent easily half my time in this game doing that. Like, I don't know about you, Tyler, but I have been searching every corner of this thing because I want to find all the little secret stuff.
Yeah, like, no, I'm the same. Wait, the world is so pretty. I mean, it's an interesting take on the Mushroom Kingdom. I mean, it always looks, you know, nice and fun. But I think that there's something about the visual in this game and the music, as Ricky mentioned earlier, is absolutely fantastic. It almost feels like you're playing a exploring Banjo-Kazooie like worlds. There's actually the World 2 is a desert ice kind of thing, and then Banjo-Tooie there's a fire and ice kind of world. There's a lot of little parallels actually between these two games. I'm coming at it from a guy who loves strategy games. I haven't played as many as I should, but I'm a big Fire Emblem guy, as I mentioned at the top of the show. And it's any turn-based game I absolutely love. And I'm right there with you, Patrick. The gameplay here is pretty fantastic. It's a perfect blend of challenge as well as accessibility, because the techniques that they give you are so simple, right? I mean, you can move, you can attack, and you can activate a special. That's what mm-hmm. your characters can do on every individual turn. But it's what you do with those tools that opens up this strategy. I think a good example, actually, just today, I'm a little bit behind you. I'm like around the middle of World 3. I'm not quite at the mini boss. On the first level of World 3, you have to kill 10 rabbits. There's different objectives for every level, which is also great for a little gameplay variety. And I put myself in a really bad spot where all three of my characters, Mario, Peach, and Rabbit Mario, were all on low health, and there was about three rabbits I needed to take down left. So what I ended up coming up with was I had Peach and Mario both use this Hero Sight ability, which lets them attack an enemy when they move. It's fantastic. And then I had Rabbit Mario sing to lure the enemies. So all three of them are in his range. They all walk out. Mario and Peach blast all the rabbits, and I cleared out the spot. I mean, if it had gone to their turn, I was wiped because every one of my characters was down to the last little bit of damage. There's so many things that you can do with those small tools, and it really is kind of a... Every now and again, you'll catch yourself doing exactly what you said, a little trial and error just to see, okay, how's the enemy going to react if I do this? And then you remember it for next time. But the challenge never feels unfair. You know, even when you get wiped, you still it's fun to just hop right back up and get right back in it and use what you've learned to improve.
That's what I'm so satisfied with, is it never feels unfair. I never feel like I'm being overly tested. I feel like I have to think with each battle, but I never feel like the game is just presenting me with some massive challenge that I'm not going to be able to overcome. And that to me is pretty important because I'm not super into strategy games. But yeah, I had a battle against the mini boss that you're going to face. he got a lucky critical, man.
That's the worst.
The one time that I had both Mario and Luigi next to each other, that guy was able to attack, got a lucky critical, took them both out. I just had Rabbit Peach left, but she has these little drone cars. Yeah. And then luckily, I had taken everybody but the mini boss out up until that point. So the field was clean, except for the mini boss. So what the odd behavior that I figured out is every time you send one of these little bomb cars at this guy, he backs up because he's afraid of getting hit by the bomb car. So I was able to run Peach all over the map using the bomb car to attack because it would back that guy up so that he couldn't hit me. And just repeat the process. I'm not so into getting perfects. I'd rather just complete the process first, and then I'll go back later and try to get a better score. But it took me over 30 turns. But it was just this me retreating, sending out my little bomb car. He gets blown up by the bomb car. He comes towards me. I retreat more, send out the bomb car again.
See, I'm different like that. When I am stuck, like if I don't get the perfect on the challenge, I reset right away. So every level I've beaten so far, I've gotten the perfect on. And I think that adds a great level of difficulty to the game. It does, once you start going for those, you'll notice a couple of more frustrating things, especially, I mean, maybe not once you've kind of gone through the game and you've seen where all these enemies have, but the one thing I really don't like about the game is the tactic cam. I don't think that is as user-friendly as it should be in a game that's really user-friendly. I'll always go to it, but whenever you meet a new enemy, a lot of them are kind of revamped versions of the enemies that you met earlier. So World 1 has the Smashers. They're these giant guys with columns on their backs that they'll whack you if you shoot them, and they'll run towards you on your turn. They'll run towards you and approach if you shoot at them. Well, in World 2, there's a similar enemy. They have an ice column on their back. And you can check the enemies and see their abilities and all that, but sometimes they don't go into enough details on it. So the World 2 Smashers are a little bit different because they can give themselves a charge that if they hit you, you get bounced. Yes. Which like kind of knocks you out of your position. And going into it, if you're not aware that you're going to get bounced from that, like your whole strategy kind of gets dismantled off of something that you really couldn't predict because the UI doesn't make it clear what the percentage chance that you're going to get bounced is. Like, I think it might even say, you know, under what the power is adds bounce, but it doesn't give you the percentage of what chance you are going to get whatever the special is. So a lot of the time, if you're going for these perfects and you run into a challenge for the first time and you go, you know, you're thinking over, you know, 20 minutes trying to beat a single level, and then something completely unexpected that you really didn't have a great chance at expecting happens, it's definitely frustrating. Fortunately, that's only if you're really going for the perfects every time, and if you're like me and you just painstakingly sit there and think about every single, you know, possible outcome of every single decision, and then you find yourself wasting time because you're not achieving your goal anyway.
And that's just you going for perfect on your first playthrough. Like, I think if you're going for perfect later on, I mean, one of the reasons I send guys out to test what an enemy will do is for that reason, that there are some surprises that come along, especially with new enemies. But it all depends on how you want to play it, of course. But you're right, the tactic cam could use some help. It could also use a zoom out function.
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely.
I have a few questions. So this game came out about like 2.5-3 weeks ago. None of you have finished a game yet, right? How many worlds are there? Four?
There are four worlds, yeah.
So I'm assuming each world is huge. Do you have any idea how much time you put into the game yet so far?
About 15 hours for me so far. And yeah, I've got one more whole world to go.
I'm about there as well. I think each world, again, it depends on how you play it. If you play like Patrick does and you're just going through, I think each world will take you about 3-4 hours maybe. If you're like me and you're like going for the perfects on your first run through, it'll probably take about 6 hours, I would say, because you are going to be resetting a fair bit trying to get that perfect.
No, that sounds perfect for me, honestly. Like about 20 hours, that's the magic number for me.
Yep, I should be done with this game in about 20 hours. And it really is. It's paced really well too. That everything, it's kind of speeds you along to your next battle, but it gives you the option to explore around and find these little secret chests, which contain art and music and weapons a lot of the time. You can solve little puzzles, and it's puzzle light stuff, but it's actually, they're decent. I find some of them to be clever, and at least it's a good distraction. It gives me a reason to explore, like Tyler said, the beautiful world that they created. I'm shocked at how this is a Nintendo game. Like, if I didn't know Ubisoft had done this, I would have just assumed it was Nintendo. This has got all the earmarks of a Nintendo game, all the quality I expect from a Nintendo game. I haven't encountered anything that makes the, you know, any of the flaws that you sometimes see in other developers or anything like that. This has all the polish and charm and the detail. It reminds me of Captain Toad. You know, there's just details everywhere, and the worlds are so alive. I mean, the third world, which Tyler's just in, and I'm basically wrapping up, is a haunted house world. Oh my god, Tyler, that's my favorite one so far. There's so much happening in this world.
I love the scenery. It's absolutely gorgeous. Every world does have a totally different feel, and that soundtrack. I know I said it earlier. I'll be writing it up an article for it, hopefully in the next couple days. It adds so much to just the second by second gameplay. I mean, these tactical games, you know, you do have to think before you make your move, and sometimes you can kind of notice the time passing by with the music in the background from Grant Kirkhope. It's phenomenal. I mean, it adds so much to the package.
It's great how it recalls older Mario games, but also is its own thing too.
Yeah. Would you guys say that this is one of your favorite games of the year so far?
I would. It's one of my biggest surprises. I mean, obviously, look, Breath of the Wild is the king right now of the castle, as far as I'm concerned. And I haven't played Metroid yet, but yes, this is one of this right now. If we're going to do our top 10 of the year, or even maybe top five is possible of the year, this would make it in there. I'm having way better time with this than I thought I was going to. And it just has been steadily progressing. I'm having more and more fun with this game as it goes on, which doesn't always happen. Usually it flatlines somewhere. I'm still having more fun, even in World 3, three quarters of the way through. Like, every time I play it, I'm having an even better time.
That's a fantastic way to put it. I feel the same way. A lot of games, you kind of get used to the mechanics, and then at some point, you're kind of autopiloting through. This game, the way it scales its difficulty is, there's a couple spikes that I feel are a little abrupt, but for the most part, is perfect, and there's always something new that's waiting for you ahead. Every level makes you think differently. I would definitely put it in my top 10, probably number 5, if I had to just, I think 5 is probably fair. It would be right there for top 5, and I have to put, of course, Breath of the Wild there, and Fire Emblem Echoes for me as well, and Splatoon 2 I think I like a little bit more, but this is right in that elite category.
I think one of the big questions we have to ask at this point, I mean, there aren't too many games. There are a lot of like indie games, but the Switch doesn't have like an enormous library yet. Is it at this point in time a must-own game for the Switch? Like, if you have a Switch, should you have this game?
I think that, okay, if you don't like this style of game, I'm not going to tell you that you have to play this, that it's a must. Like, but honestly, this is your best shot at trying out one of these. It is so accessible to people who have never played a strategy game before, and it's so Nintendo. Everything about it feels so Nintendo. I think this is something that if you have the slightest inclination, you should absolutely, you know, give it a shot. I do not see anybody being disappointed with this game. I can see some people liking it more than others, but I can't see anybody not liking it.
Yeah, it's so I have one last question in terms of the actual, like, the game itself, because I think it's E for everyone. Would you recommend someone buy this for their child, and do you see them making a sequel?
I actually think that a child, you know, like an 8-9-year-old or whatever, could play this game just fine. They're going to get through it. They may not get perfect, but they might, actually. I really think I'm not good at strategy games. Like, I've given up on them, like, very quickly in the past because they just got too difficult. And I'm making it through this one. I'm not getting killed out there. There have been a couple of stages where I've had to restart. I've restarted maybe, I don't know, 15 times or something like that. But it's not that big of a deal. It's really quick. I'm making it through this just fine. I've never run into anything where I felt frustrated, where I had to start a battle. I've never had to start the same battle multiple times. Let's put it that way. That's about the best that I can say, and I'm not a strategy guy, so yeah, I think it would be just fine for a kid to play this. I think they can handle it. Kids have been able to, you know, we were playing pretty tough games back when we were kids, and I think kids can handle this one just fine as well.
I agree. There's also easy mode, too, that you can trigger that gives your characters extra life and heals them, because in between, each level is broken up into two or three battles for the most part. And you can turn on easy mode to get all your health back in between those battles and increase your maximum number. So I definitely think that there have been harder games. I think I probably played harder games growing up than this one. So I would definitely recommend getting it for kids. Plus, it's a pretty funny game. I don't really know too much about the Rabbids outside of this. I know people don't like them because they're kind of like minions, but they're actually, it's pretty charming. The humor is definitely there. I could see a kid getting a kick out of this game.
Yeah, I think the Rabbids are really, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of great sort of physical comedy in this. And I wasn't a huge fan of the Rabbids. I didn't really care about the Rabbids, actually. But they fit really well into the Mario universe. Ubisoft has found a way to make this property just totally work. It doesn't feel weird at all. And it's very charming. It has all the earmarks of a Nintendo title. It's just super, super charming.
Amazing. I wish I could play it. I got one last question before we end the podcast. So you know on your Nintendo Switch, it updates your home screen and... Well, not your home screen, but like if you go to your profile and it shows the list of games you own, it shows how much time you've played so-and-so game, right? Mm-hmm. How often does it update? And if I have multiple accounts, does it total up the gameplay for each account or is it just per account?
I know it only goes every 5 hours.
Yes.
So it approximates basically every 5 hours that you've played. So you might have put in 18 hours in a game, but it'll still say 15. Until you reach that 20 mark.
I don't think it combines profiles either. I think it's each individual profile.
Yeah, I think
so. Because according to my Switch, before I sent it for repair, I don't think it showed a time for ARMS, but I've played so much ARMS, but I'm wondering if it's because I played it under my nephew's profile. But anyways, I was just curious. Awesome. Yeah, Mario Rabbids sounds amazing. Look, it's got such a positive response. I see them making a sequel. I don't know how much it's sold. I see it selling more and more as... they roll out more Switch units into like store shelves. I'm super stoked. Like, honest to God, guys, like the first thing I'm going to do when I get back my Switch is I'm going to play this game.
Yeah, and I hope they make a sequel. And if they do, I won't have any doubts about buying whatsoever. I will absolutely get a sequel. I've had way too much fun with this one.
Yeah, sticking with the Nintendo Direct theme, I kind of feel like if they do announce a sequel, it's the game at the end of a Nintendo Direct that gets people, like, freaking out, because this game is that good.
Exciting. And, like, I guess my final question, Mario has appeared in several RPGs, Legend of the Superstar, Paper Mario. Does this game rank among those stellar titles?
Great question. Paper Mario is in my personal top 5 favorite games of all time. I probably beat that more than any other game outside Donkey Kong Country 2. So I can't put it in Paper Mario tier. But I would definitely, for N64, I would definitely put it around the Thousand Year Door, like Superstar Saga type level, though. It's up there.
You're going to have people be very angry at you for that. It does not have the story of those games. I want to be very clear about that.
No, that's a good point. Yeah,
it is a very shallow story. There. It's a Mario story. It's got more than a normal Mario game, but it's still a Mario story.
All right. I can live with that. You heard it here, folks. Go check out Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle right now on the Switch. And hopefully, Ricky, you'll be able to play it here soon.
Yeah, do you remember the time when we used to podcast and we would have to find all kinds of crazy things to talk about because it would be hard to fill up an hour? Now it's like there's so much to talk about that we could be here for 3 hours, but we try to make the podcast short. We have an amazing show next week. You're not going to want to miss it.
Yeah. Another review, full review of a game on top of...
We have an interesting talk spot next week.
Yeah.
So
should be good. Anyway, Tyler, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a blast. Hopefully I didn't hit you guys with too many hot takes like Kingdom Battle and Thousand Year Door in the same sentence and Skyrim, 2 million sales. But, it was an honor to come on.
No, the weirdest thing you said was, I want a video game out of Stephen King's baseball book.
I had to go with the weird answer for that one.
I am not going to forget that, Tyler. I will probably be bringing that up next time I talk to you again.
I'm telling you, it would be awesome. You like play as Pedro and go out there. The who's your daddy chants from the Yankees fans pouring down on him.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Where can we find you online, Tyler?
Yes, on Twitter. I am at TylerKelbon94. And my other podcast, the NEP podcast, that's the Twitter handle, is at NEP podcast.
And Patrick, thank you for joining us. Where can we find you?
You can find me constantly proofreading articles for reviews from the Toronto Film Festival over on Kubastuff.com right now. I'm our sole film editor, and we're in the middle of a big festival right now, and we've got tons of movie articles, movie reviews that you guys should totally go check out. But yes, most of the time I'm all the time on Goomba Stomp. You can find me hopefully writing again someday when I don't have to constantly proof. But at least everybody else is writing, which is great. A lot of movie articles.
Yeah, seriously. Ricky, how about you?
So I'm glad you asked, Tim. So one thing that I don't think we do very well at Goomba Stomp, or at least here at the NXpress podcast, is use social media. And it's, to be fair, it's because I've been super busy in the past like year or so with school. But now that I've graduated and I'm starting my full-time job and I got a steady schedule, I am on Twitter like nonstop. Please, like, you know, follow me, add me, whatever. It's Goomba Stomp Mag, M-A-G at the end. You can like us on Facebook, Tumblr. Give us a rating on iTunes. But yeah, I would love to hear more from our listeners. Leave a comment on our website or just feel free to tweet. I'm always tweeting about movies, TV shows, video games, and dogs.
Nice. And I am Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N, on Twitter, or on NXpress Nintendo on Twitter as well. A Twitter account for all of us, but not for all of us, because we all have our own different things that we're working on. Anyway, you can talk with us at the show there. But please, I cannot stress this enough, you guys. Go onto iTunes, go to Stitcher, wherever you listen to this podcast, and leave us a review. Give us a comment. Share some love with Ricky D. He needs it really, really bad. So write something nice about Ricky in your review of the show, and I promise you, anyone who writes something nice about Ricky and how sad they are that he lost his Switch, I will read it next week, because that's funny to me.
And for we are going to have a contest. I can't really get into details just yet, but in the very near future, we're going to be running a few contests here on the podcast, and I'm really going to make sure that it's really just for listeners. Like, I don't want just like some Joe Nobody who listens to the podcast for like 5 minutes and enters the contest to win whatever we're going to give away. But one great way to sort of be put at the top of the list is to, honest to God, leave a rating on iTunes, and that's a promise. Like, we are going to be doing it soon. I just need to figure out a few things.
Yep. But mostly you can find us all right here on GoombaStomp.com. writing all kinds of stuff. Ricky just covered Metroid. Patrick is editing like a madman. Tyler is always in Nintendo. For the next couple of days, I'm going to be still neck deep in Destiny as I finish up my second half at games review. So lots going on at Goomba Stomp. Don't miss any of it. Go check it out now. And of course, tune in next week as we have another super fun show of NXpress. We'll talk to you then. See ya.